This was the final email. It was sent on the 25th of January 2019.
Could you read me a few lines from it? What were you saying?
I've told you and clearly pointed out a number of times to leave me alone. You have been warning me and bringing unwanted and unsolicited fear into my life, and clearly I'm not adhering to what you want from me. I'm never coming back. I had made that decision a long time ago. Save your energy and focus on something else the next time you think of me or think of invading my space again.
When Bali sat down to write that email back in 2019, it was to end a relationship that had left her feeling isolated, exhausted, and trapped. And she wasn't writing to a partner or a friend or a colleague. The email was directed to a church she had joined 4 years earlier. In this episode of The Comb, the story of what led Mbali to send that email and how she found herself wondering, is this a church or is this a cult?
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
Hi, I'm Kim Chakaneta, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb the continent for stories that matter to you. And I hope you've been enjoying the episode so far. We're coming towards the end of the season. Next week will be our final episode of this run. So a big thank you to those of you who've reviewed us on podcast apps or sent us supportive messages on social media or directly into The Comb inbox. Keep them coming at #TheComb or via our inbox on thecomb@bbc.com. I first came across Mbali in a place I tend to avoid, the comments section of a YouTube video. I'd been loosely researching a religious movement one afternoon when I landed on a video of a young woman vividly retelling her experiences with a church called Shincheonji, or SCJ, in South Africa.
So you want to stay more and more and more, like to a point whereby I was excited to go to Bible school.
And among the many comments below the video was Mbali's. She'd written in some detail about her time at the church, how thrilled she'd been to join, and how things had taken a turn and led her to leave. And there was something about the tone and sincerity of her comment that made me reach out to her.
Okay, I've started recording on the other one.
What name do you want to use? What should we call you?
Mbali is fine.
Okay, Mbali, perfect. Okay. We aren't using Mbali's real name for privacy purposes. She is in her late 20s and lives in the Eastern Cape in South Africa.
Our family is a small family. We do have an extended family in the villages in the Eastern Cape.
Her father worked in education and her mother in local government. And if you were to situate yourself within a certain economic bracket, what would that be? Would you consider yourself working class, middle class? Like where are you?
A mixture of working and middle class. We grew up having the things that we wanted, even though they were on credit, but we had them.
Buddy says her childhood was comfortable and fairly typical of a working class / middle class family. The expectation was that after finishing school, she'd go to university, which she did in Cape Town. And it was after she finished her engineering degree there that Buddy found herself at a crossroads.
So now I left varsity. I'm living on my own in the center of Cape Town, and I've just started working full time now. Now I'm trying to figure out myself, basically, and the kind of life that I want to create or want to live. As well, I'm excited with all this freedom and money that I have. So it was a mix of that freedom, money, and also figuring my spirituality. Trying to figure out God, basically, and my relationship with God, I think. Yeah.
What was it that you were trying to figure out? What were you trying to pin down?
What do they call it? Existential crisis. I think that's what I was going through at the time, because I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, now that I've finished my studies and I'm working, what else? Like, what's the purpose of my life, basically?
It was a period of uncertainty and questioning that many in their 20s go through. And during this time, Buddy bumped into an old friend.
So this lady, I'll call her Zandi, over the years would meet up ever so often with gatherings and things like that. I bumped into her in town and I haven't seen her in like 2 years or so. So it was quite a nice meet up.
Now, this wasn't a close friend. She was more a friend of a friend.
Then we exchanged numbers. And of course, in the midst of that, I was telling her of my new ventures of leaving school. Now, just started working and just trying to figure life out, basically, at this moment. So we'd hang out ever so often. She would check up on me, like, all the time. We would go out for coffees.
Their coffee meetups became more frequent.
It started off as once a week to two times, three times, and now we're seeing each other literally every day.
They talk about everything, work, family, their hopes, their dreams. Not too long after they began hanging out, Zandi made Mbali an offer.
Yes, it was a Bible study offer. But, oh no, there's this Bible study that I go to, it's really great. The people there are awesome, like you find new friends. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's exactly what I'm looking for right now.
Buddy didn't come from a particularly religious family. But there'd been times that when Buddy had gone to church for different reasons, like when her older sister was going, so she tagged along too.
As a younger sibling, looking up to your own sister, so you would do what your older sibling is doing. So I think I started going to church as well on my own, partly inspired, or rather mostly inspired by her and also by the community that we grew up in.
At university, she decided to join another church.
It's one of the international churches, so it's very charismatic, it's very opulent as well. It's like everyone's rich in that church, honestly. And it's fun as well. It's lighthearted. So yeah, it was quite different from the traditional church that I grew up with.
Although Mbali ultimately decided that this church was not the right fit for her, she appreciated the sense of community and anchoring that it had provided. And so when Zandi suggested she join a Bible study class, Mbali said yes.
And then she introduced me to a teacher, basically. So this person would teach me about the Bible, just the basics of the Bible. So you'll be doing that for 6 months, and then after that you'll go back to your normal life, but at least you would now have learned about the Bible and have grown closer to God.
Buddy said it all sounded promising. The prospect of growing in her faith coupled with the potential of becoming part of a like-minded community.
So the first teacher actually was Tabitha, this lady, a beautiful lady, very calm, well-dressed. The first few lessons is with me and Zandi and Tabitha. And then Tabitha now, she has my numbers as well. And then she would start checking up on me in terms of what are you doing during lunch? Can we meet up for a session? Or what are you doing after work? Can we meet up for a session?
But after a few lessons, Zandi, who had introduced her to the teacher, stopped attending. And so it was just Mbali and her teacher, Tabitha.
Our sessions, we would even have them at my house because I was staying alone. So she would come over and then, we would have a teaching. I would say maybe 3 to 4 times a week, I think. But then also on weekends now, there's always an activity to do now of, oh no, come volunteer with us, we're doing this. Yeah, we meet new people, like it's a gathering. So now over the weekends, I'm also meeting other people. I was feeling happy actually because my times were occupied and I was making new friends as well, meeting new people. So it was a nice environment in general.
According to Mbali, the Bible lessons she was receiving were not the mainstream ones she was more familiar with, but she found that appealing.
The teachings are extremely different from what you would get from your normal church in terms of the interpretation of the Bible itself.
I'm not going to get into the content of the church's teachings, other than to say that they use the Bible as a key text, and that they believe the Bible to be full of parables and secrets that only their leader, a man called Lee Man Hee, can decipher.
The main attraction, more than anything, is the, it's this differentness, but also the sacredness that comes along with it. So they make it so sacred and secretive at the same time.
So how was it secretive?
I remember the books that I was writing on during the lessons, so I couldn't keep them with me. Tabitha would take them with her.
How did she explain that?
They were saying that because it's such a new teaching to me, especially, that if I were to be asked about it, I wouldn't be able to answer properly. So it's better if they keep the books and keep all the material until such a time that I am well-versed with the teachings and I could be able to defend the teachings. So they would make an example of, imagine if you've just started your grade 12 math and now this is your first semester and now you're being examined or asked something that you would only learn in your fourth semester. Will you be able to stand for that? You'll be able to answer that? And I'll be like, oh, no, I wouldn't be able to. So it's like, oh, exactly.
There was also something else that Bali says drew her in, the idea of being one of the chosen ones.
And then as you go through the lessons, you'd eventually figure out that if I'm the one who's reading, who has the opportunity to learn these teachings, then that means I'm the chosen one in this instance. So there's that level of feeling special, of being chosen.
The idea of being chosen is not particularly unique to this church. But what made it stand out to Mbali was that she was being told that if she studied properly, she had the chance to become one of 144,000 saints or part of the great white multitude. That's people that will be chosen to go to heaven. Mbali was all in. When her one-on-one Bible study classes came to an end, there was an opportunity to move to the next level, attending a group class. After taking some tests, Mbali was able to join. And although Mbali had never in the past had to study or pass a test to become part of a church, at the time, this was part of the appeal.
Oh, it was nice, eh? It was exciting just to see all these other students who are as eager to learn about the Bible, who are part of the chosen ones, who are part of this secretive society. There were other students as well who were just as new as I was, and then there were teachers. Zandi was in the class, but now she was part of the people just organizing the classes.
Zandi was the old friend who had initially connected Bali to the Bible study.
So it was a very open, friendly space. It was very inviting.
After months of more classes, Bali passed over, which meant she graduated from being a student to becoming a church member. And it was then she started to learn a bit more about how the church operated. She remembers this one thing that happened, that at the time to her seemed normal, but now looking at it in the rearview mirror was odd. It was to do with the classes she had attended for months, which she assumed had been full of other new students like herself.
Only to find out that maybe 50% of the class are actually members of the church and only the other 15% are actually new people who are just literally learning.
As time went on, Bali began to notice something else that was more worrying, a sense of being constantly monitored by other classmates.
You would make friends in the class. You, on your end, you are thinking that, oh no, it's just a friend, they're being friendly. Any doubts or any questions that you would have during break about the session, one of the students would be telling your mentor, your teacher. They would even go through our books, actually, just to see what kind of thoughts that we are having as we are going through the lessons, so that they tailor the lessons just to make sure that you are moving with the class, but also that you are evading any doubts that you might have. All the time, they want to know what you're doing, where you are. There's a huge sense of surveillance.
According to Mbali, researching the teachings and the church itself was actively discouraged.
We're not allowed to research about Ching Chong Ji as a whole. Yeah, so you'd have to apply self-restraint every time you go on the internet.
There is a lot of information online about Shincheonji, whose name means new heaven and earth in Korean. The church has its roots in Seoul, South Korea, where it was founded in 1984 by a man called Lee Man-hee, who is often referred to as the Promised Pastor. Members believe that he was chosen by God to lead humanity into the millennium, which is a kingdom of peace that will last 1,000 years and which is imminent. They also believe that their 91-year-old leader is immortal. And as well as branches across South Africa, Shincheonji also has a presence in Kenya, Namibia, Uganda, Ethiopia, Madagascar, and Zimbabwe. The secrecy with which Mbali had initially found to be intriguing was beginning to weigh on her. She said she had to constantly deploy something the church referred to as wisdoms.
When our parents or whoever that we're staying with or our friends or whoever is asking where we are during the lessons, we shouldn't say that now we are doing the Bible study or what type of teachings we're actually learning, because now we're not well-versed with the teachings. So it's better that we use wisdom, which is basically lying to our family members and our friends about our whereabouts, what type of teachings we're actually learning from this Bible study.
And how did you use these wisdoms in your private life?
In 2015, I enrolled in doing my furthering my studies. So I would always say that I've stayed late in doing my assignments. So that would be my wisdom. Sometimes I would say that I was at the Bible study, but it would get suspicious of, why is this Bible study? Why are you finishing at 10? Because you can't really say what type of activities or what you're doing exactly in the Bible study. So that's when you're using wisdom. But no, it's just a Bible study. But why are you coming home at 10? No, it's just finished. And you try to brush it off or you lie about something. So that's the using of wisdom.
Who did you have to deploy the wisdoms to?
I would deploy them to my sister. So now I would have to apply a wisdom on her in terms of where my whereabouts and what I'm doing after work. So I think she just got annoyed that I was never at the house, because I have all these activities that are happening in my life, and especially this Bible study that's taking much of my time.
Did you feel that you couldn't just share that with her?
Like, again, because it's a new type of teaching, I couldn't really say to her, this is the type of teaching that we are receiving there, because I know she would have said, no, this is a cult. She would have definitely said, this is a cult or whatever, get out, whatever. But then I wouldn't have. So that caused a huge drift between with our relationship, with just all the secretiveness that was happening. I think that was like one of the beginnings of the cracks with our relationship. Until today, we're not as... it has never recovered, really. I was dating at the time, so that relationship basically fell apart.
Because?
Because I never really had time for us to hang out, and I was never honest of what I was doing.
As Mbali began spending more and more time at the church, she felt herself drifting further away from her family and friends. Her days now revolved around church meetings and activities.
If I couldn't attend, so they would say that, no, but you have to make time, because if you lose one day of the teaching, you're basically falling back from the class. So there was never really a room to have your own life, basically, because you're always there.
And even when she wasn't there physically, she said she still felt pressured to participate.
When companies shut down during December, and when I go home, I would also have to attend the services. So I remember I would be chilling with my friends or my family, and at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock on a Wednesday, I have my earphones on, and I can't even say to my friends and family what I'm actually listening to. And I'm just listening to this church. And on Sundays, I'm also with my phone and earphones listening to this church. So you couldn't miss a service wherever you were in the country. And if you do, they would try to at least get you to come on Thursday to listen or to listen the following day.
Bali describes it as an intense cycle. She'd wake up, go to work, then head to the church, where she'd stay for 3 to 4 hours, and finish at about 10 p.m. every day. As well as studying the teachings, helping to fundraise, Bali says she was also required to harvest.
They call that whole process of evangelizing harvesting. So you have to harvest fruit as part of the things that you need to do, the fruit being a new member. I had to harvest at the same time. I had my own studies in varsity and I was working. And the fact that I was not harvesting any fruit was a lot of pressure. It basically, there was a sense of me being a failure as well, because I'm not harvesting. So what type of tree am I on top of that? Because now I'm a tree that needs to bear fruit. So what type of tree am I? So there was a lot of doubt as well going through my mind. Am I even supposed to be here? I'm not doing as well as everyone else is doing. I remember there was even a point, even thoughts in my mind at the time of, okay, maybe if I cut down from work and I cut down from my studies, then maybe I'll be able to be this ideal church goer or ideal member who's able to bear fruit.
So how were you feeling at the time then?
I was exhausted. I was exhausted mentally and physically and just spiritually as well. I felt like I was losing myself.
While researching this episode, I came across numerous articles, videos and forum postings which describe SCJ as a cult, with former members claiming they'd been deceived and manipulated. An allegation SCJ denies. And some of the stories that I came across online echoed Mbali's own experiences.
That was the problem. I can't recall, but all I know is I was not in a great space at the time, emotionally, mentally. So
I'd gone through the massive loss of suddenly losing my dad. And at that point,
normal sessions where she comes and then she opens the Bible and then we share the word of God.
And we began to meet every week for just one-to-one Bible sessions.
I'm asking myself repeatedly, well, why can't we take the books? Because that's when you get to like meditate God.
It's sort of just surveillance, really.
You not telling your family, hiding this to your family, is a good thing. You are using wisdom on them. You are not lying.
All of my concentration was just on the activities of Shinchenji.
I was losing myself and I wasn't liking who I was becoming.
The question of what is or is not a cult is a tricky one because there's no single legal definition. What is generally agreed upon are some of the characteristics: a shared commitment to a charismatic leader or ideology, a belief system that has the answers to all of life's questions and solutions, which are to be gained by following the leader's rules, and a high level of commitment from the members. And some would argue that this definition can apply to more mainstream religious movements too, that the boundaries between cult and religion can be slippery. After speaking to Mbali, I contacted SCJ. And usually when you're doing a story like this and you reach out for a response, you might, if you're lucky, get a terse statement and not much else. But that was not my experience with SCJ. They were very eager to talk. They sent me pages of literature about the church and recorded their answers to my questions. I first wanted to know, why the secrecy? Why were members discouraged from researching the church? The voice you're going to hear is that of a church member.
Members are cautioned about the vast array of online information about Shinchenji that is inaccurate, misinformed and not trustworthy, and are encouraged not to read false reports, which could lead to confusion and misunderstandings.
They attributed this to what they referred to as SCJ's complex history, starting out in South Korea, where, according to them, the government was strict about churches conforming to a particular Christian denomination in order to be considered an Orthodox church. As a result of SCJ not fitting that label, they say they were labeled as unorthodox or cult. According to them, congregation members were negatively impacted when making known their affiliation to the church. When asked more specifically about members being encouraged to lie about what they were learning or about their whereabouts, SCJ linked it back to what they refer to as media slander and hostile propaganda. They said as a way to avoid this negative feedback, students and church members do not reveal their participation, as being exposed to this might result in them no longer participating. I asked them about Mbali saying that she felt as if she was under surveillance. To this they said,
as Christians, it's not uncommon to pray for each other or even ask for guidance or pray from the leaders of the church for us or for others that we know are struggling with anything. This is not surveillance on the congregation members and not different to other churches.
As to why members were pressured to attend services, they said,
we encourage our members to attend worship service and gatherings to keep their faith in Christ. We do not, however, force or coerce our members to join.
And on the question of having to recruit other members to harvest and bear fruit, they said,
as humans, we naturally want to share good things that happen to us. If we have good news, we can't keep it in. This is how many of our congregation members feel after going through our Bible study. And as most Christian churches do, we encourage our members to also bring others to enjoy the good news of Christ. We do not, however, coerce or force this. And if the former members feel this way, we sincerely apologize for the misunderstanding.
I also wanted to know whether church members sometimes posed as students in the classes, as Mbali had alleged. And to this they said, there are many SCJ members who repeat the Bible study course for different reasons, and that some choose to make it known that they are repeating the course, and others choose not to. And finally, I asked about the articles I'd come across that labelled SCJ as a cult. SCJ said that the word cult is no longer used by scholars because it is subjective and discriminatory, and that there was a preference for the term new religious movements. They also added,
for those of us living out a fulfilled and fruitful life of faith as a member of Shincheonji, it is heartbreaking to hear that former members' experiences have been so bad to the point where they label the church in a defamatory manner.
So, what made you finally decide to leave?
I've been wanting to leave for many months prior to me actually leaving, but I didn't have the courage to actually leave because there's a sense of if you leave, you are basically a non-believer. And your family will be condemned to the depths of hell. So you are basically a representative of your family. So you can't really just up and leave, even though they say you can, because you're fearful of what are the actual consequences of me leaving, like my family going to hell. I don't want that for my family. Your conscience is saying, don't do this. But then my entire fiber in my body just that didn't want to be there anymore.
In the end, it was a diagnosis that led to her departure.
So I got sick. I physically got sick. I got TB. So it never went away. And I would keep going to the doctor. I would get medication. 3-4 days, I'm okay. And then on the fifth day, I'm starting to get sick again. Oh, then I would talk to my sister. And then I was talking to her on the phone. I think I was on my way to this church. And then I was losing my breath as I was walking. I'm a fast walker and I'm fit in general. But I was losing my breath. Like I would have to stop every few meters to just catch my breath.
An inability to breathe. Mbali says she could see parallels with what was happening to her physically with what she was experiencing emotionally. A sense of being closed in on. In the end, Mbali pushed aside her fear and sent a text.
I sent this long text to Zandi and to now my cell group leaders.
It was essentially a breakup text, outlining everything that had happened, how she was feeling, and why she was now leaving.
It they ruined my life, basically, at the time.
Why do you say that?
I lost the sense of whom Bali is completely. I lost the sense of whom Bali is. So, and my sense of confidence in general, because I can't bear this fruit. So it literally, it shaked my whole entire being.
So you send this text, and what happens? How do they respond?
So I sent this text and I blocked them in all my social media. They were at my house all the time, like trying to talk to me. My landlord would always call me. And I think one of my last engagements with them, yeah, I had to swear them for them to leave me alone, because I don't want to go back to that space. The last engagement, they came to my workspace. That's when I lost it. I sent them a long email. Let me see if I still have that email, actually. what's her name?
That's the email we heard at the beginning of the episode.
Really now, the nerve you guys have for invading my space as you please.
By the way, I asked SCJ about Mbali saying she had felt hounded when she tried to leave. And they said that when a member goes for long periods without communication, they try to establish contact to ensure that the member is well in health and spirit. That email marks the end of any contact Mbali had with the church.
So now I was literally on the journey to remember who Mbali is and recreate Mbali now, because the old one has long left the station, and I have to recreate the person that I want to be, and with my own beliefs and what I want to believe in and the kind of life that I want to live. It was just getting rid and just forgetting a lot of the church itself and its teachings and the fears that it instills in one's life.
What do you think was lost as a result of the time you spent there?
My innocence in churches in general. I could never look at any religious form actually the same again. Whatever religion I'd want to go into, I have to be the center of it. No one else can. What I want to believe in, it's up to me. I can never follow a leader anymore in terms of religion.
This interview is the first time Bali has ever really opened up about her experiences with SCJ. With time and distance, she feels she can now talk about it and share her experiences with others. And how are you doing now, Bali?
I'm doing well.
You sound hesitant.
I'm doing well. Perhaps the existential crisis, or it's a never-ending quest for life. Because you are forever evolving as a person and forever growing. I'm finding a new path on what to believe and how to live at this moment.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Next week on The Comb, when you strike gold, but then lose it all. This episode was produced by me, Kim Chakanetsa, and Mary Goodhart. The sound design is by Marco Oriunto, and Piers Lynch is our editor. A special thanks to Mashle Majola, whose audio was used in this episode.